The best in Bitcoin made audible. You're listening to Bitcoin Audible with Guy Swan. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. This is Bitcoin Audible, and I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we've got a piece today. This is actually from CoinDesk. It's Nick Carter wrote an opinion piece that was posted up there earlier this morning, I think. It was updated today. So it was posted yesterday. But I'm sure everyone listening to this, or at least the vast majority of you, have heard about the crazy Twitter hack that happened where somebody literally got like the God mode keys and just started going into huge accounts on Twitter and then posting a Bitcoin like affinity scam that you send me one Bitcoin, I'll send you back two thing, and then he just posts his address. And a whole bunch of people, lots and lots of eyes on that address now. And supposedly, we'll talk about this after, because some details have come to light as to who the hacker might be and stuff. So, with that, let's go ahead and hit this article though. Again, this is by Nick Carter and it was posted on CoinDesk yesterday, but a lot of attention has fallen both on Bitcoin and on Twitter right now. But this article is about the need for a user-owned internet. And it's titled, "After the Twitter Hack, We Need a User-Owned Internet More Than Ever." So let's go ahead and jump in. The dust is still settling, but July 15th, 2020 already looks to be one of the worst days in Twitter's 14-year history. A devastating hack, apparently taking advantage of internal tools, enabled hackers to take control of dozens of high-profile accounts and solicit Bitcoin donations. Noteworthy was the delta between the scale of the attack and the financial reward. The hackers brought a $28 billion company to its knees, but appear to have collected a paltry $120,000 in Bitcoin. The real fallout will be reputational. Details are still fuzzy, but one must imagine that the hackers may have had access to private communications for accounts that they penetrated. The contents of these DMs could easily be weaponized, either for extortion or embarrassment. While their particular crew of hackers seems to have operated in a fairly haphazard manner, starting with accounts on crypto Twitter and moving up the supply chain to Bill Gates and Elon Musk, a more sophisticated and determined group could have wreaked absolute havoc had it wanted. And the hits just keep coming. Twitter's response was slow and shambolic. The period of anarchy lasted several hours. Twitter personnel were undoubtedly aware, but were either unable or unwilling to shut down the platform during the turmoil, as they should have. Verified accounts were unable to post for hours afterwards. The blows to Twitter's reputation are multifaceted. High-profile accounts were embarrassed and associated with scams, regardless of any security measures they may have taken. If Motherboard's reporting that the hack relied on assistance from an insider is accurate, Twitter's controls look exceptionally weak. Twitter will undoubtedly face questions from governments over this failure. Already, Missouri Senator Josh Hawley has demanded answers from CEO Jack Dorsey. The Trump administration will likely see another means to apply pressure to Twitter, aggrieved by Twitter's aggressive fact-checking. From now on, many users will not feel comfortable sharing information via DM, mindful of potential future hacks. It's ironic that the same day as the hack, Twitter rolled out new DM features designed to make the experience more akin to Facebook Messenger. And perhaps most damning, leaked screenshots revealed more information about Twitter's secretive abilities to control accounts and narratives on the site. The leaked internal dashboards, evidence of which Twitter is aggressively deleting from the site, contain keywords like trends blacklist and search blacklist seemingly an admission that Twitter does exercise some editorial judgment when it comes to which concepts receive algorithmic boosting and which don't. The hack plainly illuminates issues that cryptocurrency and Web 3.0 enthusiasts have been raising for years. Trusted third parties are security holes. Isn't just a slogan. It's a concept that millions of people will have intuitively grasped for the first time yesterday. The sheer centralization at play, evidenced by the God Mode key, is striking. One wonders why it's even possible in the first place for Twitter employees to commandeer any account on the platform. Everyone knows that Twitter is the political discussion platform of choice for world leaders. Had the attacker been more inclined towards chaos rather than entrepreneurship, they could have used their access to contrive an international incident among hostile nations. While hacks of centralized services are standard fare these days, rarely are they broadcasted in such a direct, explosive manner in real time. Additionally, the accidental reveal of Twitter's long-rumored deboosting tools will intensify the view among critics that Twitter is a partisan, editorializing service rather than the neutral one it claims to be. The gradual insertion of more discretion into the internet's most vibrant discussion forum is a recipe for disaster. As many have pointed out, it invites governments to pressure or infiltrate the platform to obtain efficient tools to control speech. These aren't conspiracies. It's a matter of public record that former Twitter employees have been caught spying for Saudi Arabia, and that a current Twitter executive also happens to work for the British Army's Information Warfare Unit. How many more Twitter employees are proxies of foreign states seeking to gain enormous leverage by nudging the platform in a favorable direction? Ultimately, there are no insurances Jack Dorsey can provide to guarantee his platform will be free from future interference or capture. He has simply created too big a honeypot. Twitter is a platform with well over 300 million monthly active users globally. It has also been aggressively pursuing more controls alongside algorithmic rather than chronological timelines, more fact-checking, and more direct intervention in trending topics. All of these measures constitute an efficient toolkit to control speech. What more could a despot intent on censoring discourse want? In response, many, including myself, have argued social media handles, as well as user-contributed content, ought to be understood as property. This contrasts with the established model in which the platform controls and owns everything and retains the discretion to both monetize user-contributed content and kick users off the platform for any reason. The digital squatter's rights argument holds that users generating the value for the platform, and by enclosing a handle and mixing it with their labor, should be entitled to a lasting and well-codified claim. Censorship and bans are better understood as expropriation and eminent domain. Mindful of the current balance of power between users and platforms, such an arrangement is unlikely to emerge within the current crop of internet oligarchs. Instead, it's more likely that a wholesale reimagining of social platforms will need to take place. For once, this use case represents a non-monetary application for public blockchains that makes sense. Social systems that piggyback on top of Bitcoin and Ethereum allow users to genuinely own their online selves through public key cryptography. This is more fragile at the individual layer, since key loss is a threat, but far more robust globally. It's impossible to compromise every Urbit or Blockstack user because the actual user registry is stored on-chain and users custody their own keys. The Urbit philosophy, in which users can freely associate and dissociate with, but not ban, other accounts, allows for the coexistence of mutually rancorous individuals without relying on top-down censorship. Granted, such blockchain-based social systems are still immature despite years of work and advocacy, so their flaws are not yet fully evident. But as of yesterday, we can no longer claim they are a solution searching for a problem. A user-owned and operated social internet built on a public key infrastructure is an absolute necessity if we are to resist tyrants, both in the public and the private sector. All right. And that was again by Nick Carter, an opinion piece, an op-ed on CoinDesk. And right there in the middle, they actually recommend there's another piece that Nick Carter wrote recently that we've not done on the show, but is a really interesting take, because I go back and forth with the whole property rights in the digital space sort of stuff. But his other article, which was, I think it's like a month old now or something like that, that your property rights should extend to social media. And it's basically that little like one sentence argument that he made that, you know, you are basically you're staking and creating a handle and then mixing it with your content and your words and all of these things. Therefore, you should be entitled to the ownership of that part of the platform. Like that is yours that you made valuable, which is a really interesting take. And even though I there are some reasons that I disagree with it, I gotta admit that's the ultimate goal. You know, that's what a public key infrastructure, a system that he talks about, would actually set up. And I think that's absolutely real. I mean, that's what Bitcoin does, is it creates digital ownership. It creates ownership in the digital space of a scarce asset. And I truly believe that we are working to figure out how to do that exactly. But I think that is the end goal. Regardless of the fact that right now we're on these platforms and all the data is just stored on some server that somebody else owns. Really interesting discussion and nuances as to the ownership and property rights in that situation without a clear defining characteristic like Bitcoin has, where my ownership has nothing to do with anybody else. I have the key, therefore I am clearly the owner. I hope for that to be the case. Like, I think that kind of a system is the only thing that will actually work. Let's go ahead and hit our sponsor really fast, though, because I do want to talk about this idea and also the Twitter hack and some of the stuff that happened for people who are not aware of the details that unfolded there. So let's hit our sponsor, and then we will jump back in. Now, what interested me most about this article was it was right in line with Nick Carter's previous, or at least one of his previous articles on CoinDesk about property on social media, about the idea that our digital presence and our digital reputation and footprint, our handle, like these things are our property as we imbue them with value. And that is a really interesting argument. I've really had a interesting journey trying to figure out how I feel about property rights in the digital space, because it's something largely that I just don't think is possible without encryption. Like, I don't think it's really possible to enforce something legally, because the systems that will be used to actually, when we actually manage to get property rights, Bitcoin being a great example, in the digital space, like, I think we can actually leverage the legality of it to say that, like, you know, somebody who had their Bitcoin stolen, that Bitcoin, quote unquote, still belongs to them. But also with privacy technology and the fact that Bitcoin does not care, it's who has the keys and who can protect those keys. The legal option, or the legal ownership, doesn't really matter. Because at the end of the day, it's who has the keys, you know, like when you lose your keys, you just don't own it anymore. And it doesn't matter if the government says you do, you can't spend them. Whereas in the digital space now, like social media and stuff, is all of this data is on some other server. And this really just made this, like, my favorite quote is one they actually highlight in the really big in the article was that trusted third parties are security holes isn't just a slogan. It's a concept that millions of people will have intuitively grasped for the first time yesterday. And that's really a important takeaway from this, is that people realize, like with all the hacks that have happened, you know, Equifax, Sony, I mean, just the list is ridiculous. Target, Office Depot, there's a payment processor. I can't remember exactly what the name of that one was. But I mean, you've heard about them. They happen constantly these days, actually. And this one, I think, was just more in your face. That's what's most interesting about this one, is that, like, what's the clear view, is easily the biggest data breach, specifically, and that happened very recently. But at the exact same time, it wasn't something that people saw, you know, it was something that people heard about, kind of thing. Like, there's something about the hack being data that you don't see, or like you're not interacting with it, that makes it seem easy to dismiss. And I think this Twitter hack is much more in your face. A lot of people saw accounts that they follow and that they watch, you know, all tweeting a lie, you know, like trying to scam people. And obviously somebody had straight up hacked Twitter. And the really big thing is just that, in my opinion, about this is just how much control essentially the employees of Twitter have, that there is literally an admin key that can just go in and out. They can impersonate, they can just post on behalf of anyone, and, you know, post private messages, like DMs. And I mean, the amount of control and problems that could be result from something like this, like that is a crazy amount of power, essentially. But I'm very reluctant to be, everybody is calling like this is the end of the centralized web, and I'm not so sure. These things are forgotten really, really fast. This was a crazy thing for, you know, a handful of hours, and it's big news. And probably the most interesting takeaway is that a lot of people just got to refresh that Bitcoin exists. But I think people generally are complacent about this stuff. Like, I think in a couple of weeks, this will literally be forgotten. Maybe the government, like, will continue to be outraged, and, you know, there will absolutely be changes from this. Like, Twitter won't hear the end of it for a while. But I think in the general sentiment and the general population, it will just kind of get pushed under the rug. You know, 2020 is crazy enough. There's plenty to distract us from caring about this. And I think in a short while, it'll just be like Equifax. It'll just be like Target, Clearview, Facebook, you know, all of it. This was just, this will force a change in Twitter, if nothing else. But back to the whole decentralized web thing, is that trusted third parties are definitely security holes. And I think it will continue to push people to think about privacy and security differently on the internet. But I'm not, like, Nick Carter actually mentions Yerbit and Blockstack in the article. And I just don't see those as even potential solutions. And I'll be the first to admit, I don't know exactly how either of those things work. I do know they both have tokens. I'm pretty certain what I know about Yerbit is that it's creating federated servers, and that's what they tried to do with Mastodon and Diaspora and these sorts of things. And they're interesting. It's an interesting system, but they have always had incredibly serious drawbacks from the social perspective. from the idea of creating a network. I just don't think that, I think the best potential solution is to allow people alternative ways of validating and like logging into the account so that like they, you could encrypt stuff so that Twitter couldn't see it, you know, like you could do that client side. And we could do it with even, you know, there's a, the Microsoft is actually building the ID system that we've talked about a number of times on the show about Bitcoin Magazine's been covering it pretty much, and how they're creating a side database of public key identities, which is sort of like a DNS in a sense to, you know, all of these IDs that you could actually sign with a key, and then you can keep your own backup of it as far as, you know, what I can pull of it so far, data wise, and allowing people to log in that way, to have some way where genuinely you couldn't log in, like Twitter never had the key. Like LSATs, another great example is that if the data was treated properly, it wouldn't really matter that it was on a central server. In the same way that if somebody else is storing, you know, it's not a problem that other people are storing your Bitcoin on the blockchain. Like everybody has a copy of the blockchain, right? But it can't move. You can't change the data unless somebody signs with a private key. You can do end-to-end encryption. You can do encryption on a central server, but it is really the central server that enables the network to grow, like the global, give the global sense of the Twitter social network, that you can see everybody and talk to everybody. And I don't see a decentralized, certainly not a posted on the blockchain sort of solution. Like, I think that's a terrible solution. I don't really know if Yerbit or Blockstack are doing that specifically. I think that's more, I think both of those may be more of a just everybody has a public and private key sort of thing. But I mean, I could be wrong there. I really just have not dug into those. But at the end of the day, this just makes Twitter look bad. The whole reveal of the, like, blacklist this from trends and like the buttons, the moderator controls, I'm kind of, I don't understand why anybody's surprised about that. Like, it seemed perfectly obvious that that was happening. And it also seems obvious that they have to do that at some, to some degree, because, you know, they allow like porn and all sorts of stuff on the Twitter platform. They, and there's no way whatsoever that they can prevent spam. I mean, I see bots on Twitter all the time. Like, I don't see any easy solution to making it so that even the people can police the network, so that, you know, you could mark something as porn, because then, and have an algorithm or something keep it from ever going trending, or keeping it from showing up in your feed if you, you know, specifically restrict that type of material or whatever it is. Like, there has to be a massive swath of this that is being managed manually. There's just no easy solution to that. So it's like, duh, those things are there. Like, I don't like that. And clearly that means that they could have editorial control, that they could be deeply manipulating the narratives of what people see. And I think they are. I think that comes with the territory. I don't like that. I think it's a terrible thing. But at the exact same time, I don't see some easy way that they could just do A, B, or C and undo that. Like, there is no real solution to it. But what I find funny that Nick Carter mentioned in this article was that they didn't get much Bitcoin out of it. And it's probably a combination of, you know, being taken down, the posts themselves being taken down. But I don't know. In fact, somebody posted a hilarious Venn diagram of people who are smart enough to use Bitcoin and people who are dumb enough to get caught by those scammers, and they barely overlap. There's this tiny little sliver, and that might have just been what it was, is that, you know, there just wasn't much to take advantage of. Not too many Bitcoiners were drunk on the 15th, apparently. And there was also reports that it is moving through. It's being mixed with Wasabi Wallet. So I don't know. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. What to think about that? Because I'm a huge fan of Wasabi Wallet. And now I'm curious. We'll be able to tell if how good Wasabi's mixing privacy is when using law enforcement as a adversary. But apparently there were conversations in like a hacker group, and this person went by the hacker name Kirk, just K-I-R-K, and like talked about this and like even posted screenshots and stuff. And it seems like it's just a kid who, you know, hacking into things, somehow got the God mode keys to Twitter. And I legit thought this might be some sort of nation state thing, just because it looked like the accounts that they grabbed and the fact that they didn't do anything else looked like a subtle threat. Like, well, I guess it's not subtle, but looked like a look what we could do. Like, you know, we just got, like, Trump just put sanctions on China. And I think it was like a day before, 2 days before, or something like that. And then Twitter gets hacked and Joe Biden's account, you know, tweets something out. But the fact that it was a silly Bitcoin scam made me wonder. I was like, would they do that? You know, I don't know. I kind of went back and forth, but it appears to be just a doofus up on hacker boards having a good time. And, yeah, he got $123,000 in Bitcoin. Supposedly, a couple people said that they tried to track it and that he cycled some of his own Bitcoin back around into the same address. Somebody connected it to, apparently, they are a trader on BitMEX. That's probably where they get caught. But again, you know, they, you can use BitMEX with, you know, fake credentials. And I know people do that all the time. But the thing is that if that person ever logged in with their real IP address, all it takes is once. And, you know, that could really, that could be bad. We might find out who Kirk is pretty quick. We will see. That might be something to follow very closely. Hopefully somebody really does some deep dive into that. And we'll keep an ear out for if they catch good old Kirk, the Twitter hacker. But yeah, at the end of the day, I'm not so much thinking that this is going to be like some great push towards decentralization or, you know, end-to-end encryption. I think this is one of 1,000 pushes in that way. And, you know, maybe it's a shove that's just a little bit stronger than the others. But I doubt there will be meaningful change because of this one, even though it was really hyped and kind of particularly exciting on the 15th. Like I said, I think it will probably get, you know, kind of pushed in the background. I think at the end of the day, I think what will finally make that push is something like LSAT. It's something where people adopt it for some other reason. And then people realize that, like, companies realize that it can be used. But we are so far from that right now in Bitcoin, Ethereum, in any of these quote-unquote cryptos. Like, nothing is there yet. And the idea that we could adopt any of it in mass is a huge stretch. I mean, I don't think Nick in particular is like really suggesting that we can, just that, you know, this really brings that into attention. But holy crap, trusted third parties are security holes. A good article though, and what a topic and what a week. Sorry, I've been really crap or really lax on the episodes here this week. I've been fighting with my video setup because I'm trying to do some YouTube videos and been working on stuff, and it's just been a nightmare. And I had all these audio problems resurface that I thought I fixed ages ago, And I was mad as fire yesterday. I worked for like 6 hours straight and all of it was ruined and there was nothing I could do. So that is why we haven't had any episodes. I've been trying to change too many things all at once. And then the bulk of my work just kind of got thrown in the trash. But we have corrected that. And a huge thank you to BTC Sessions, Ben Perrin, for pointing me in the direction of OBS, which I've had multiple people recommend to me and just have yet to really finally sit down and play with it. And it is a godsend. I am absolutely going to be using that for video going forward. And if anybody has not checked that out, it is open source. It is available for Windows, Mac, and Linux. And it is an amazing program for exactly that sort of thing. So we are out. Don't forget to check out the article on CoinDesk. Again, this was titled After the Twitter Hack, We Need a User-Owned Internet More Than Ever. And I got to say, at the end of the day, I absolutely agree. Much love to Nick Carter for the always fascinating stuff to read. And we may hit his piece on digital property rights or to social media property rights, because I will probably be coming around to that topic sometime soon. And it is a fascinating one because I have yet to really figure out where I stand on that. So think on it. Think on it. Let me know what you think about this episode, what you thought about the Twitter hack. And is this going to be the push for the decentralized web? Is that it? Like, do you think this is big enough? Or do you think this is another, you know, is this going to just fizzle out and kind of fall into the mix with everything else? Let me know. Hit me up on Twitter at TheCryptoEconomy or at Bitcoin Audible. You can find me at both of those locations. And until next time, this is Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. Take it easy, guys.